Hi, Otto.
Hi, Calvin. We're into this ongoing series of conversations in which you explain what you've been able to find in the approach of tetrionics. And tetrionics is the continuation of quantum theory, in which the quantum is the starting point of the creation of tetrionics. And in the previous session, you've explained how an atom has come into view in tetrionics, and basically it's a totally different view than anybody had about it. It's not a little planetary system, it doesn't have orbiting electrons. In fact, it's a bit like a gyroscope in which a neutron and a proton which have the same kind of shape but different charges actually form a niche in which an electron can rotate and store energy, or actually be fired away from that holder and to what we would then consider to be the energy play of atoms. And in the previous recording, I asked you if you would be willing to explain how these single units then can constitute the atomic elements as we know them in physics. And in tetrionics, it's evident that there is a completely different approach to the understanding of atoms, but there's also a completely different view for atoms that emerges out of it. Basically, it's a solid-state view, so to say, in which units pack up like batteries in series and in parallel and form energy units of larger structure as a result. But you also found that in the view of tetrionics, there is a precise 120 atomic elements and the straightforward logic behind it. I know it's quite a vast topic, but I'd really like you to unfold the ideas as you found them in tetrionics.
For sure, Otto. Yeah, we'll dive into it heads on, but I mean, like, obviously it's a big topic. It's the biggest of the e-books, double any other e-book that I've done. And that just belies how much information there is that needs to be addressed when we're looking at quantum chemistry. So I suppose the best place to start with the illustration that I've developed for the atomic nucleus. As you can see in that illustration there, it's just a straightforward meme I developed to give people an idea. Basically, at this stage, we won't delve too far into the precise topology of the matter that forms each periodic element. But suffice to say, as you said, there's 120 possible periodic elements. And they're not spherical objects as traditionally viewed. We have had the Dalton and Thompson models of plum puddings and solar systems, the Bohr model with quantum jumps and Bohr radii, and the Rutherford model with the nucleus and the electron at a greater distance spinning around. As we touched on yesterday when we spoke about atoms, obviously there were a number of changes that came up in that discussion, from the basic idea of a spherical object for protons, neutrons, and even atomic nuclei themselves. What we end up with is obviously the deuterium nuclei forming the basis or the basic building block of all periodic elements, as opposed to the current model where hydrogen nuclei form the basics via the Z numbers and then excess neutrons are built into the model. We can go into discussions of how that all comes about and what the implications are in another lecture. But in essence, what you see in front of you with this illustration of the elemental atom is deuterium nuclei bonding together according to the Z number of the element. That is to say, if you're talking about carbon, 6, there are 6 deuterium nuclei, 8 deuterium nuclei for oxygen, etc. What changes is this quantum synchronous converter. electrical engineering or electrical dynamic component, the deuterium nuclei have, and their quantum levels, the principal quantum levels, determine the overall molar mass energies of any element. And of course, we then delve further into the breakdown of the other Schrodinger numbers, or the electron configurations, if you like, in order to give us differing properties for each element. The best place to probably launch into it is as an extension of yesterday's discussion, where we saw that deuterium nuclei formed the basis, and as shown in illustration 4101, tetrionics can now show us a model of both hydrogen, deuterium, and even tritium, or larger elements, as charged matter topologies. So that, again, the mass energy are the Planck quanta within those charged fascia, and the arrangement, or the charges of the fascia, bring about the distinct topologies of each element. In this case, we've got hydrogen at the top with the up, down, up, and on the right hand side we've got a down, up, down, which is a neutron. Obviously, neutrons don't play a role in hydrogen, but they do in deuterium, and you can see the difference again, like yesterday, where hydrogen is a proton with an electron, resulting in a neutral matter topology. But we can now show the quark arrangements of the individual quarks within the baryon matter topology, which is something that doesn't even occur in the standard model presently. No matter how complex they are with their math and their modeling, it still remains a spherical model with two spherical quarks held together by color forces. This is not the case with tetrionics. We now have defined, rigid matter topologies. We can see the mass energy contribution in the charged fascia, and then the matter, or the mass matter itself, has a unique topology. Again, protons attract neutrons via the opposite charge, or the electric charge fields, of the component quarks. In this case, ups attract downs, and downs attract ups. So protons and neutrons will bind together via these opposite charges. As I touched on yesterday, you can in fact think of the neutron as being the opposite charge component, or mirror image, if you like, of a proton. And that's where the attraction takes place. It's not explained in the standard model at present, because at the standard model they just have a spherical particle with no charge, with no explanation of what's really going on. Here we see the full QM and QED electrodynamics of the charged fascia bring about the residual strong force that's often mentioned, that bring baryons together to form deuterium. And it's the deuterium that makes up the Z number. So wherever you see an elemental Z number, just think of equating that Z number to the number of deuterium nuclei. So there are equal numbers of protons, electrons, and neutrons in an element. And what makes up the extra mass that's normally accounted for with excess neutrons or additional neutrons is the energy levels of the deuterium nuclei themselves. So as they increase in their principal quantum numbers, they obviously have more mass energy via the squared equilateral geometries of Planck quanta within the charged fascia. So this then creates additional mass or weight, molar weight, for the particles concerned. You will find, as per the previous illustration, there are 8 quantum levels in periodic elements, and those 8 quantum levels end up showing us that there are exactly 120 elements all up that can be produced. 4102 gives us a polar view of how deuterium nuclei can come together in a basic S and P orbital arrangement in this case. The middle two being the S orbital, the closest contact orbital in the center of the core electron configuration, surrounded by six P orbitals. The deuterium nuclei orientate themselves according to the electric charges of the component quarks and the magnetic dipole arrangements of the charged fascia as well. They all have an interplay. But you can see in a generalized sense, you can say that opposite charges still attract. Most of the arrangements, we can again delve even deeper into this at another stage. Most of the charges are just simply opposites attracting. And as the nuclei for periodic elements increases in the S, P, D, and F orbitals, they tend to form in the S and P orbitals groups of three, up, down, up, down, up, down, as you can see there. Even though you have two downs a close contact to each other, that arrangement's balanced with an up, so that the tri-quark interaction, although weaker because of the repulsion, still holds itself together. You can think of it as similar to the gluons in quarks, where you have a neutral gluon separating two charges, or two gluons surrounding a charged tetrion in order to form the arrangements of tetrions that form quarks. Similar thing happens here. Not as strong, because obviously there's not as much physical contact. There is not a fascia-to-fascia contact. It's a edge-to-edge, or even a, I don't know what you'd call the point. It's like an apex. It's just a pointed section of the deuterium nuclei that come together in this contact. So therefore, it's normally termed the residual EM force, or the residual strong force. The models here, again, we have CAD models, and I encourage everyone at every opportunity to build the paper models, because this is where the paper models showed me how to correct all of the work that we're going to touch on today. Like every other person, even with the paper models, I started looking at the arrangements that were possible using S, P, D, F, G, H orbitals, trying to understand what was going on, and got hopelessly lost. I then left it, did QED, came back to chemistry, and upon figuring out what we're going to touch on tonight, and then elaborating on it for each and every particle, or each and every element, I should say, I completely revised some of the work in QED as well. So there's an interplay between QM, QED, and chemistry that you need to work through in order to get the model straight in your head and see what's happening. But in the process, obviously a lot of things change, starting with the charged matter of topology of atoms themselves, as you can see there. 4103 just gives a quick breakdown of the difference between conductive and insulators particles. In the crudest sense of it, it comes down to the arrangement of the electrons within the nuclei themselves, with the deuterium nuclei. In this case, we have deuterium and tritium illustrated, hydrogen being separate. But you can see in conductors that the coulombic attraction of electrons binds them to the top, and if you build the models, you will see that this is a natural fit. The electron is still free to spin, even though it's bound to the top of the deuterium arrangement. But in this case, what we end up is a quantum battery arrangement with a less tightly bound electron situated either against the neutron or the proton. They can move on either side and spin freely in those arrangements. But we don't have a quantum synchronous converter. The electron being loosely, not as tightly bound as they are in insulators, which are quantum synchronous geometries or topologies, means that they're easier to break free or to have them move across the top of the particles, or even act as small bearings. In the case of graphene, they act as a bearing between deuterium nuclei themselves to aid in the slippage between the layers of graphene. But in the insulator arrangement, where the electron binds even closer to the deuterium nuclei, it forms that quantum synchronous converter arrangement, where instead of the energy being stored as mass energy in a matter topology, we have an arrangement where the stored mass energy of the quantum battery is now able to be released in a controlled fashion via spectral lines, heat, radionic emissions, radioactivity, etc. So identical mass energy topologies in all four cases there, but with differing results, conductors versus insulators. In the conductors, the electrons are more able to break free and move across the deuterium nuclei of the elements themselves, or to be broken free completely. Whereas in the insulator, they're bound in a position. So charges tend to stay in one spot. They don't migrate as they do in the conductor. Of course, if you add enough energy to a conductive situation, the electrons will move across the elements concerned, or the compounds, and you end up with ions, where all you're left with is a positive charge elementary, which is plus 12 tetraionic or quantum charges, and the mass energy is locked in the matter topology as a storage quantum battery arrangement, as we've touched on. So the difference is, obviously, with the ionized ones, they then have a stronger coulombic attraction to free electrons or other elements that are in their vicinity with a negative charge, that then facilitates the building of compounds, or larger in the case of deuterium nuclei, they bring them together to form periodic elements. Again, the next illustration, 42, just shows, highlights that the baryons all have identical mass energy matter topologies, differing only in their net charges. The protons and antiprotons have plus or minus elementary charges, or negative plus one, or negative or plus 12 quantum charges. And whereas the neutron and antineutron have the same topology, but their charge distribution is plus and minus 18, resulting in a equal distribution and a net neutral charge in both cases. Even though, as you can see there, one has a down, up, down, the other has anti, down, anti, up, anti, down, a quark arrangement, you end up with the same thing. What creates the principal quantum numbers is this series addition of the quantum batteries, or synchronous converters, depending whether there are or are not electrons bound to them. But again, end-to-end stacking of these batteries, just if you like to consider them as D cells, results in higher voltage or higher energy levels as more and more deuterium nuclei are plugged again. Again, we begin to see basic electrical theory creeping back into chemistry. In each case, you've got 13.525 electron volts for the K energy level, and then it decreases for the ionization energies, because the series energy of the quantum batteries, or the deuterium nuclei, increases with each quantum level. And again, they're all squared numbers. N1 has one energy level, N2 has 4, N3 has 9, 4 has 16, etc., right up to N8, which has 81 N quantum levels, or charge, 81 mass energy quanta per fascia. So that's how the energy increases. And of course, in a gravitational field, the extra mass energy of these quantum levels leads to increased molar masses. That's what the standard model at present for chemistry, the original ones, the Bohr, Dalton, Rutherford models, all failed to account for. It's what Schrodinger quantum numbers, interestingly enough, enforces being the fact, because the principal quantum number is N1 to N8, or whatever number they choose to go to. But for some reason in the quantum models, where they're developing these hydrogen ions with the excess neutrons, they don't tend to draw in or take into account the increased mass energy levels of the matter topologies. I don't know why. It's been around as long as Schrodinger's numbers are there. That was the purpose of the equation, was to develop a mathematical model that explains the energy levels, or the shells, plus the orbitals and etc. Spins, to give a unique quantum number for each and every element. But it failed to be put into the model. You'll see all the elements currently just having protons and excess neutrons, or excess number of neutrons, all of the same energy level. They indicate the charge, but they don't indicate the quantum numbers for the individuals. You often see that with reference to the quantum numbers, they say it's just too complex to specify all the quantum numbers for a particular element, particularly when you get into the higher numbers. Tetrionics completely changes that, because using this color code, this knowledge that we have here of the energy levels plus the position of the electron, we'll end up by the end of this discussion being able to launch into a completely new discussion where each and every element and all its quantum numbers are shown in a single illustration, or one of two, depending on which aspect you want to look at. We'll map every single element, periodic element that's possible to be mapped, and show their quark arrangements, their energy levels, their azimuthal angles, their spins, the whole lot. All the information that's contained in the Schrodinger equation is then mapped to a visual model of periodic elements. And that brings us to 4302, which is the tetrionic periodic table. It's a brand new periodic table. First time that the Mendeleev periodic table's been adapted and modified and played with and redesigned into many configurations over the years in an attempt to find patterns that can be mathematized, like Schrodinger's equations, to show the underlying pattern that brings about the mathematics they see in the periodic element table, hence the name, the periodicity of the elements themselves. Where it's failed is in the mathematical approach. Mathematics is about pattern recognition. It's not about visual geometries and topologies. The mathematics is simply an abstract human construct to allow us to recognize these patterns, but it does nothing, or it says nothing, about the physical geometries or topologies associated with that pattern. As we've seen in tetrionics, we started with the foundational postulate, squared numbers are equilateral geometries. We've built the atom. Now we're going to launch in and build all the chemical elements and show how their position as these deuterium nuclei come together and their energy levels determines the entire Schrodinger equation for each and every element, plus the elemental families that you can see listed down the center there, and the connection between energy levels, atomic orbitals, and the suborbitals to the element groupings themselves, even so far as showing, in this case, at the bottom, how the Aufbau table, or the building up process, as typically illustrated, is only half the picture. They've overcomplicated the drawing at the expense of showing the true symmetry that is involved. And we'll touch on that as we dig further into this topic. Obviously, in the previous illustration, we're now into 4303. It just shows the quantum, the elemental numbers. So based on the polar view of the charged matter topologies of deuterium nuclei as they bond, we can now show a periodic table, or develop a periodic table based on the matter topology of all elements. Looking down, you can just see in red the s orbitals surrounded by orange yellow p orbitals, again surrounded by d orbitals in green and f orbitals in blue. That's all the orbitals there are. There are no g, h, etc., as you'll find occasionally in some textbooks. It goes out to F. At that point, they become extremely loosely bound and prone to fission. And the model, as you look at it from the side elevation, builds up and out to through quantum numbers 1 to 4 out to F orbitals. And at that point, it goes F orbitals back to S, like a child's top, the old push down push tops that kids used to play with, same model, but the energy levels continue to increase, in this case from 5 to 8 s s orbitals at the very top of the top. Sounds strange to say that, but in relation, it is exactly the same as the child's top. They're in the same basic shape. And as you spin the top, so does the periodic elements. They can spin in not quantized angular momentum, but classical angular momentum, a vector rotation about a point, like a spinning top. So that spinning complicates the quantum mechanics, but it explains why when looking at things, we get some crazy explanations of electron orbitals in this case. Trying to map the center of any of the electrons that are bound in the deuterium nuclei, as they're illustrated there, according to the s, p, d, and f orbital arrangements, while the atom is spinning, creates these circular tracks, which are reminiscent of the Bohr radii away from the central nuclei of the atom. They are simply, they're not physical lines, they are just tracks that are made by a rotating atom in this case. We can then obviously equate the energy levels and the orbitals to various schema as shown on the left-hand side to try and simplify the complexity of all the elemental families. And again, we color code them. This picture here shows all the basic information, the Z numbers, the elemental numbers, the orbitals, both the orbitals and suborbitals, and it shows that there are 120 elements in total. But more importantly, it shows the location of the deuterium nuclei that form that particular element in numbers. 4304 shows exactly the same information, but in this case we've used, instead of the elemental number, we've used the abbreviation for the elements themselves. But again, this table is based on the polar topology of atoms. So if you find a particular one and you're familiar with the arrangement that forms the sp, d, and f Aufbau building process, you can quickly develop models of each and every periodic element with respect to others, and that shows their properties, all their Schrodinger numbers, etc. Again, they're all color-coded to increase the information content within the visual models, as opposed to relying on numbers that, when used over and over again, become very complex and abstract with respect to each other, and you end up with the Schrodinger equation, a fairly long equation for the full modeling of any particular element. And it provides, again, no information on the matter topology or the mass energy geometries at work. Here we can show the physical arrangements. And that's what 4307 shows us. If you then build models, 2D or 3D as we've done, of each and every element, you can then create a table based on the old Mendeleev periodic table of the polar view of each and every element as it's built up. So you suddenly get a true 2D polar view of the physical topology, charge topology of each and every atom or element with respect to the others. You can see that deuterium in the K, the first element on the list, because hydrogen again is not a deuterium nuclei. It is not the element that creates periodic elements. It's a free radical. There's many corrections that the topology gives us, but we can see at a glance now the difference between the elements size-wise. The table, as Mendeleev arranged it, gives you a hint of the energy levels as they increase, but it fails because it doesn't have the R8 energy levels, and in fact some of the Q7s are normally left out because there's no hint as to where the through Mendeleev or through Schrodinger, where the number of periodic elements finish. Tetrionics, because of this symmetry going out to F orbital then coming back into S, from S to F to S, and 1 to 8, gives us a fixed number and a fixed topology. So we account for each and every element. And again, it shows that the groupings are similar to what the current Mendeleev arrangement is, but we can expand on that in much greater detail now than we could using either the math or the table, the previous table. 4401 simply shows us a schematic representation where I developed an overlay, the charged matter topology of tetrionics for the periodic elements versus the spherical model that's been in use traditionally from day one of solar systems, planets, etc. We've now corrected all that with the energy levels and the charged mass matter topologies. So we can now create a shortcut illustration for each and every element, or we can use it as a generalized one to include information from Niels Bohr's work, or the if you like, the early days of quantum mechanics, along with an equivalence to Schrodinger's quantum numbers from the most recent work in trying to mathematize these energy levels. You can see that in this case, the atomic shells, K to R on the left-hand side, relate directly to the principal energy levels of Schrodinger, N1 to 8. It's a one-to-one relationship. And because through the matter topology, we can actually use that as a horizontal reference line for the various energy levels, as shown there, the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, or sorry, aqua, blue, indigo, violet, all match up with K to R and 1 to 8 energy levels. So we've now got a visual aid to quickly compare one to the other and include tetrionics work and modeling. Looking across the bottom, you can see that the S, P, D, and F orbitals are there, as I mentioned. You can see that as you build up the quantum levels from 1 to 8, that it starts at the S, goes out to P, then D, then F, then F, then D, then P, then S. So this shows, again, as I mentioned, the spinning top arrangement. It's not perfectly symmetrical. If you look at the sides, it'll be a different arrangement. You won't see that until you look at the CAD models or you build physical models out of paper yourself. You will glimpse it in the modeling, such as what you see in the periodic table, but it's not until you physically build it that you see this side elevation, or the 90 degrees to what we have here, how the entire nucleus is weakened or carved out right back to the inner core electron configurations. And that's what gives an inherent weakness to larger and larger nuclei. So as we build up to the uranium, etc., to the F orbitals, you get to the point where, firstly, the deuterium nuclei are less tightly bound, so they're prone to breaking away. and you have this valley that's carved out on the sides back into the core S&P electron configurations, which means the D and F orbitals are prone to breaking away under fission and releasing their energies. But these classical SP D and F orbitals, again, relate directly to Schrodinger quantum numbers, the second and third numbers of N and M of Schrodinger's quantum wave numbers for periodic elements. It's a one-to-one match again. So again, we can draw a one-to-one vertical line in this case and make it a cross-reference. So you can see in that one picture, whether you're talking classical atomic shells and electron orbitals or Schrodinger's principal quantum numbers or additional quantum numbers, we can quickly map any of them on a one-to-one basis to any electron's position in that model. So it doesn't matter how large the element number or how big the element is in the periodic table, we show each and every electron that's bound in the deuterium nuclei that builds it up, along with the energy levels and its position within the nucleus. So this allows us finally to map all of Schrodinger's numbers at a glance for any element, something that they still can't do above normally element 10, occasionally element 20 if you push them mathematically. It's just too complex to map them all out for each and every electron position, because every electron will have a full set of Schrodinger numbers, then the next electron will have a full set. So element 30 or element 70 will have 70 sets of Schrodinger numbers for every electron position. It's a huge, takes up pages to map out, say, uranium's full set of quantum numbers. You can see them visually here at a glance. You can also see in the center the number of electrons or the number of nuclei, however you wish to state it, with their associated spins, hence why they're shown in pink, for each energy level or each principal quantum number. Again, you can see that starting from N1 to N8, we have 2 per the K level, 8 for the L, 18 for the M, 32 for the N. And then continuing upwards, we repeat again, 32, go 18, 8, and 2. Again, making this classical spinning top model. But that now condenses and unifies Bohr's model, Schrodinger's model, and the new tetrionic model of mass-matter-energy for the first time, giving us a physical representation of atomic nuclei. 4402 then takes those that information and just highlights the fact that the energy levels build up and then come back down towards the core electron, so S out to D, sorry, out to F, then from F back to S again, reminiscent of the photon geometry. And in fact, if you look at it, the number of electrons is 2 times the squared number, as in 2 equilateral or squared geometries. So if you look at the numbers, 2 is 2 times 1 squared, 8 is 2 times 2 squared, 18 is 2 times 3 squared, 32 is 2 times 16 squared, sorry, 16, which is 4 squared. Again, the pattern then repeats, but in the opposite direction, going back down. That gives us the periodicity of the elements. It shows us that there are 8 atomic shells in total, N1 to N8, no more, and that within those 8 energy levels, or those 8 atomic shells, there are a total of 120 periodic elements that are possible. No more, no less. So I think we're up to currently element 118, although the method by which they create them raises some interesting questions about whether they actually have found out those higher order elements as opposed to building them properly as we see here in Tetrionics. Again, worthy of another discussion. 4403 just shows us, using tetrionic topology of elements, how we can map all the information pertinent to any element. We can look at the side elevation of any element, and I tend to illustrate these things in the full information, so elements 1 through to element 120. You can see their energy levels mapped against their atomic shells in this case. You can see the S, P, D, and F orbitals close in on the model with the associated quantum numbers to it. We can use that's the side elevation of atomic nuclei. We can use the polar elevation, the down view, to map the exact same quantum arrangements or for any periodic element. But in this case, we can also show the L and M, the orbital, suborbitals, or azimuthal and magnetic quantum number information for each and every element, and how it arises from the position of nuclei with respect to other nuclei in the overall matter topology, and again, the tracks made by the various fixed electrons within those nuclei as the atom itself is able to rotate. And at the bottom, we see that at what I call an exploded engineering view. If you were to take that top model that we have here, which is the most condensed arrangement of quantum batteries or deuterium nuclei possible, and if you were able to blow it up to our scale and then pull it apart, that spinning top model would actually pull out with all the deuterium nuclei side by side instead of packed into the polar view. If they were stacked out as though they were on shelves or atomic levels for energy levels 1 to 8, that is the view you would see. It's an exploded engineering view, if you like, of all the deuterium nuclei in that spinning top. The only difference between the exploded view and the spinning top is that in the spinning top arrangement, this is how they naturally bond by the residual EM force, the quark interactions, into that compact view that we see at the polar view of. So it's again, if you think of them just as quantum batteries, it's a highly efficient packing of quantum batteries